Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrapped Web. Mr. Brian Castle, how are you, my friend?
Doing okay. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty well. Getting geared up to head to the mountains this weekend with the fam. Not skiing. Kids are too small for that for now. But like sledding, heading out to Mount Hood. So that's exciting. Just trying to get a bunch of stuff done during the day so I can head out there and unplug and have a good time.
Yeah, I've been trying to get some more mountain days with my family. I did get my five-year-old, actually both of them, my three and five-year-old did lessons a couple weeks ago, and then my five-year-old went a second day, and she's starting to really, you know, not in a serious way, but she's like really excited about skiing, and I'm super excited about that, because I could tell, like, we're about a year away or so from her joining me up on the wheelchair lift and, you know,
oh, that's true,
doing greens and stuff like that. So I'm excited.
Nice, man. Pretty cool. Besides that, you know, this week was strange. I came in on fire, you know, 2 weeks vacation, all this stuff, all these ideas. I come back, it's January. Yes, let's get it. And the rest of the team was looking at me like, what, dude? What are you saying? They were just literally blank stares as I'm like ranting and raving. So it took a few days to kind of catch up with the energy and get everyone back in full swing. And now toward the end of the week, at some point yesterday, there was like something happened and everything came alive and everyone's laughing and talking. And it was like, okay, there we go. We're kind of back now. This week really felt like a week to just kind of get organized and get back into things. And that's it. You know, the things I would want to talk about today are just looking back one last time at 2019. You know, we're about to publish our year-end summary on just the performance of the overall network over the period of the year. We hit profitability, which is great that I can talk about how that the past 6 months went from hitting profitability and then hiring more and not being profitable, and then all the stress that went along with that, and then really counting on the holidays to get us back there. We're finally back there, which feels great. And then the last thing to talk about is just our marketing mix being shifted from a direct response mindset to more of a brand and awareness mindset.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
That's my end of things. How about you?
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot. I mean, today's episode comes just a week after our last episode. So, but between last week and this week, I did go on that very short retreat, one-nighter, and I could talk about that and some insights that came out of that that I'm working through right now. I'm now in the process of hiring a very part-time, like one issue at a time, developer out in India, actually, this time. This is not like a major hire, I don't think. This is more like a targeted, get some help to do some small things. The other thing, if we have time, is I did prepare some notes because I'll be heading to Big Snow Tiny Conf, kind of my annual mastermind group, really. I go to Vermont and then the same thing out in Colorado. And I have sort of like a slide deck that I'll bring there where we do a mastermind session. And at the end of that are some really big picture questions. I think of them more like push yourself or push myself out of the box thinking questions. I want to pose some things to make me think about things that frankly I just was not even considering. And like what if this happened? I thought it'd be cool to kind of pose them to the audience, and hopefully you all can think about those things too. I mean, January is a good time to be thinking about stuff like this. So
it's funny you say that, because a few of the conversations internally have been around that. You know, we've talked about this before. There's always an optimal path and you're never on it. So it's always worth just asking, hey, what if we just took it this direction or did it this way or looked at it in a different way?
And that's why I love going on trips, especially tiny conferences, because it's really the perfect setting for thinking about those questions and talking to our peers about them, because you're away from the business. You're literally busy all day, so it's not like you can be bombarded with emails and work. It just puts you in a different mindset, you know?
Now here's the thing that scares me or makes me hesitate on it is I don't want to throw things off, right? Things have this natural momentum to them. It's definitely valuable to not interrupt that. I've been trying to really, really frame things as this is brainstorming. Like we're not building another product. We're just talking. you know, one of the things that we are considering building that I don't want to talk specifically about yet, but it feels like a stepping stone. It feels like a hill that we would climb, and then we would have a very different vantage point. We would see new opportunities from that hill. So I want to ask people to brainstorm about what those things are.
To see if it's even worth starting.
Yes, yes. But then like intellectually retreat back into, okay, those were ideas and those are cool, but that's not going to change the sprint, right? It's not going to change our roadmap for the next 3 months. I hope I'm not throwing a curveball into these processes too much, and hopefully laying out this context of brainstorming, because I really want to do it. And I also see people get excited about it when we talk about ideas in the future. It kind of makes it feel like you're part of something bigger, like this larger vision, as opposed to executing on what's the sprint right now, what do we need to do, what do we need to shape up, and so on. But a little dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really speak to the team atmosphere on that. I've done a little bit of that with my team at Audience Ops over the years, and it's a very different type of company. It's not like we're continuously building a new product. But
but you did a big thing with the podcasting service.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but there are things like that, like I've sort of mentioned that, like, oh, like we're gonna start doing this or that, or we're gonna start using this software tool, and then they like never happen. And so I'm always kind of like hesitant to make announcements on that level, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you have a leadership team and you know, so that's where I think the visionary like brainstorming stuff can happen. Whereas like in the trenches kind of focus on the sprints, I would think, I don't know.
You're right, but it's still a similar dynamic of a limited amount of political capital. You can't just, you know, rant and rave about different ideas every week and then have them not happen. At some point, people stop taking you seriously. So you do have to be careful with what you are saying. So that's, I think I've gotten better at it, but I hope it's actually working when I'm saying this isn't some crazy idea. This is an exercise we're going through together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Okay. Cool. Well, yeah. Why don't I talk about this little retreat I did? So I was going to go snowboarding, but the weather was crappy because the Northeast just sucks with weather these days. I ditched that idea, and instead, I really like this. I think I'm going to do this way more often now. Is I hopped on Amtrak at New Haven, Connecticut, which is 10 minutes from my house, sat on this beautiful train ride. I've done this a few times now, but it's an absolutely gorgeous ride along the coast of Connecticut. It's literally the train tracks are like on the water almost. Really beautiful. And I took an hour and a half ride to Providence, Rhode Island, and stayed a night in downtown Providence, which is, I've been there a couple of times now, but man, that is an underrated little city. It's so beautiful downtown. They've got a river that goes right through the middle of it. They've got like the state capitol. It's awesome. So, you know, got a nice hotel room, and I got some really great thinking time and just work time right on the train. They've got Wi-Fi on Amtrak and everything, and like, you know, worked from the hotel coffee shop, worked from the room, and got a good like 24 hours away from home. So that was really nice.
When you have that opportunity coming up, do you work on what you normally work on, or do you work on things that are outside of what your normal, you know, week?
A little bit of both. So there were things that I sort of talked about on the podcast last week. This was definitely focused on Process Kit and thinking about the positioning and how to just get more people converting from the trial and having it really click with people as soon as they, like from how they discover the product, the job to be done that they're trying to accomplish, to getting started, doing that job, being like, okay, it works. Here's my credit card. Like I'm trying to smooth out that whole path, and that touches everything. That's the positioning of from the top headline on the marketing site to what we focus on in the messaging to the product itself and how the features are organized and how the views are like laid out and everything to the onboarding videos and the emails and all that. So what came out of the retreat there was I did get a lot more clarity on exactly how I want to position Process Kit and some changes and tweaks. It's not a very big change. You know, most of the marketing site that I have there is going to remain, but maybe tweak some of the copy. So starting there, but then really in the product itself, I'll try to explain this on the podcast. It's obviously a lot easier if I was like showing, and I plan to actually do a YouTube video about this, but basically up until now, and this is still the case currently with the live app, the way that Process Kit is laid out, the database models and the features in the app, you have processes, you have projects, and we have a thing called project types. Project types is kind of like the glue between your processes and your projects. So you can have a project type, and this is what I try to actually explain in all of my support docs and onboarding flows. And frankly, it just gets a little bit confusing. And so I'll say, like, you have a project type, you might call it new client onboardings. And in that project type, you can preload certain processes, like your client onboarding process and your custom fields related to that. You set those up in your project type so that then you can create new projects, a new customer onboarding project, click that, and it fires up a new project, loads in your processes, automatically assigns the people, automatically does this and that. And that's how that works. But there's just a lot of like setup and wrapping people's minds around the idea of like a project type. Like what is that? What are these settings? So the insight that I came to was I could literally just rename that existing feature, rename that existing model from project type to pipeline. So going forward, it's going to be Process Kit is for documenting your processes and powering your pipelines. Any kind of pipeline that you have, but with a specific focus on a few really common use cases. So like going back to the marketing site where we'll have a new section called solutions, you know, one solution will be like power up your new customer onboarding pipeline, power up your sales and proposals pipeline, power your blog content pipeline. So really when we're talking about like repeatable processes or repeatable projects, by their nature, they're filling a pipeline of some sort, right? And I think that's a little bit more, I could be wrong about this, but that seems to me a little bit easier to like latch on to. Like, yeah, like my company does have a pipeline of customers being onboarded, you know?
Right. Yeah. Project type is from a technical point of view.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it is a type of a project, but that's not how I think about it.
Right. And then setting it up that way, it actually does mean that I'm right now refactoring a little bit of how the app is laid out in terms of how you see your pipelines. And that also enables like different things like now we can add permissions to pipelines. So like me and my salesperson and audience ops will be the only ones who can see the sales pipeline. But my writing team won't be, they'll only be able to see the articles pipeline. And they're really sort of separate, even though they're within the same account. So you could do things like that. And then from like an onboarding, like just getting people set up with their Process Kit account, I think just the concept of like, okay, you have a client, it all comes back to this concept of like jobs to be done, right? And this gets into how I plan to market and position the product, which is like, all right, if your agency or your service or SaaS does a lot of handholding and customer onboarding, this whole page is about customer onboarding, our customer onboarding solution. So you can come to Process Kit, get our pre-made kit with a pre-made process template, the pipeline all pre-configured, just like one click, get you set up, you know, tweak it to your needs, and you are good to go on that. And then you can kind of expand into other pipelines in your business. So it's not like building a new feature. It's literally taking that project types feature and naming it pipelines instead. But of course, that means going through the app and refactoring a lot of little things, you know.
Yeah, but it's a big deal. We've had a lot of trouble with it. Explaining to people how tag funnels work and adding tags to your products and how that tag then tells us to go through the checkout, then the other tag tells us which upsells to show, like that was and still is, there's a lot of friction there. One of the reasons we're doing better with the demo than with the free trial is because you have a human explaining it to you than text, because it's hard to explain. And, you know, one of our best features, the thing that I think is genuine innovation in the market that doesn't exist, is that product funnel, but we got the name all wrong. And we cannot figure out how to explain it properly so that it hits people. Once we are in a conversation with people and we explain it, they're like, holy shit, I didn't know that's possible. But clearly we have not done a good enough job of positioning it, naming it, and explaining it so that it actually lands on in that way. It seems like small tweaks, but it's a big deal.
Like naming things, it's so important, and it is so hard to get just the right name, because you've got to name it from a technical standpoint to make it make sense within your code base. But more importantly, you have to name it in a way where your customers can latch on to it and put it in these boxes that already exist in their minds. Like, especially with a tool like ProcessKit, which is sort of like a project management tool, they already have these preconceived boxes or you know, things like structures in their mind of like how something like this should be laid out. And it's about like kind of fitting the innovations into those pre-existing boxes, you know?
Yes. You don't want to invent completely new nomenclature, but how do you put a tiny bit of a wrinkle on it where, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah.
And then your additional word or two tells me how it's slightly different from what I'm used to, but it's tricky. You don't know.
Yeah.
I think for many reasons, it's good to default to existing norms and existing acceptable, just words and terminology that everyone knows.
Yeah.
But then when you need to add your little bit of spice on it, your little bit of detail, it's, you know, funnel, people in e-commerce know what a funnel is. Product funnel, because it's based on a product, we thought that was right. It's not right. So what is it? Is it a store funnel? Is it an Instagram funnel? Is it what? We don't have it.
And then there's also the sort of like a fear, if you will, of niching down or over niching down, right? And I think that in the early concepts for ProcessKit, I didn't go far enough. Like by calling it a project type, you could literally use it for any type of project you might ever do, you know? And so like kind of like abstracting things to that point where you know, ProcessKit could fit any use case. And now and even just this week, I was really debating a little bit like, all right, well, if I call it a pipeline, will this make any customers feel like, oh, well, I don't think in terms of pipelines? There is sort of that risk, but I was already saying like, look, if you do repeatable projects, then this is for you. That is the key differentiator between a typical project management tool, is like if you have repeatable projects. And if I just take that like one tiny step further into the niching direction, it's like if you're doing repeatable projects, then you most likely think in some form of like pipelines, you know.
This project, then the next one. Like this client gets onboarded, then the other client gets onboarded. Then next week we have another two clients onboard.
Exactly. Yeah.
That mindset.
Yeah. They're following a production schedule. Like you have a factory floor, things moving along, you know?
Yes. Yes. That's what I was thinking. As you said that, it's like pipeline conveyor belt, like this something yeah. there.
I mean, the homepage of ProcessKit is an animation of a conveyor belt, you know?
Yes.
Like it's
hell yes.
So that's where it's going. So right now, this week, I'm deep in the weeds of refactoring the product, not rebuilding things, but like more visual, like more styling tweaks and renaming things inside the app. That's happening this week. I'm hoping that next week, I mean, I'm sure this will continue into next week, but probably sometime between my two trips, basically the next big step from here is to take this change to the marketing site and think about like how to have these like solutions pages and tweak the copy to be more around this pipeline concept. And, you know, I've got some trips coming up. So it's going to be the kind of thing where I ship a bunch of changes in the product and then the messaging and the support docs are going to kind of lag behind a little bit, but that's Q1 basically. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, let's flip it over to my side. The big thing, 2019 ends, the holidays are always good for us. And what it did for us as a business, most importantly, is put us into the black. So we hit profitability. The way I represent this to myself and to team members visually is I draw an X and Y axis, and then I draw revenue as a line that's pretty consistent up and to the right. It's not actually consistent, but it's just easier to represent it that way. So call it a 45-degree line going, you know, up and to the right. And then expenses, I show as like stairs. And so as our revenue grows, sometimes we're profitable. And then as we get more profitable, we say, all right, now let's push, all right? That this is why we raise a little bit of money. And then the stair crosses the revenue line and we become unprofitable. And then revenue starts to catch up and then we hit profitability again where they meet. And then we say, all right, let's spend more. Let's push harder. And it goes back to unprofitable. And that's what we've been doing the whole time as a business. Now it feels like it's not as necessary as it used to be. You know, to get from 20 to 50K a month to 100K a month, it was like, we got to push, we got to hire, we got to, you know, that was the trajectory we were on. Now that we're, you know, several times that, it doesn't feel necessary. And so what I'm doing is I'm insisting on a margin that stays consistent. And so, yes, we will increase expenses, but we won't cross over the revenue line again to unprofitable. So that's kind of my hope, and that's the discipline I'm trying to instill, because along the way we raised more money. But now I don't want to raise more money. I think we should be able to stand on our own 2 feet right now, and we're good unless something changes and the ambition changes and opportunity or whatever. But for now, it should run profitable. 2019, at some point early in the year, we hit profitability. And then sometime in the summer, we said, all right, let's push. Right, let's get ready for Black Friday. Let's get ready for the holidays. Let's push. We hired a bunch. And then right around the same time, we said to ourselves, you know what we need to do? We need to switch from trials to demos. And that's when we kind of hurt our growth trajectory, but for the betterment of the company overall. And so instead of hitting profitability, you know, 2-3 months later after that hiring spree, it didn't happen. And so we went into burn mode where I'm cool burning 10K a month. I'm not that cool burning 40. Like that's not comfortable. And so it got into a period between June and the holidays where it was like, all right, let's stay focused here because we want to get back to profitability as soon as possible. I run things really conservatively compared to other people I talk to. So we're always 12, 15 months of money in the bank, not like, you know, 3 months. So it's never that stressful, but I like the buffer. I don't want to go anywhere near having to like do layoffs or something. It happened. The holidays hit, things went well, and now we're back over to profitability, and the pricing increase will kick in next month. And it's like, okay, now let's see if we can actually follow through with that discipline of maybe we'll increase expenses, but not to the point of break even.
Yeah. And especially with the price increase coming at like after you're already profitable, it's good. You know?
Yes. That was my hope. My hope was, okay, if we can get anywhere near profitable, then the price increase brings us over. Now we're actually over before the price increase. So it's like, okay, now we actually have the resources. Let's do things right. Let's still be disciplined because the instinct is still, all right, now we have more money. Let's hire. Let's grow. And I don't want to do it the same way.
So the most recent like cross back into profitability, was that a result of just the activity of the holidays? Was it a result of keeping expenses under control or just like a growth in revenue?
Expenses have been very, very consistent for like 6 months. We just kept everything the same. You know, all the salaries and every labor is just consistent, right? If we're not hiring, it's consistent. And then what we spend on travel and on contractors and on marketing has just been consistent. So it's really, really hasn't, it's fluctuated, you know, 5% every month, but nothing major. So it was really just, okay, let's keep that consistent and let's wait for the revenue to kick in for the, now that the churn is better, the growth will be there. And so we had a few good months and then the holidays were just better than expected. And so that's, you know, that increase overwhelmed the break-even line and got us into profitability before the price increase. So now it feels good. Now we just need to get through the price increase and the, you know, any blowback and cancellations that happens from that, which is inevitable. And then we should be in a place where if we keep the discipline, we'll keep that margin of profitability that might shrink and expand as we go, but I don't want to cross back over. And if we do cross back over, I'll update it on the podcast. And I think that'll be a good accountability on like, okay, well, you said you didn't want to do that. Why? And if it's because business isn't going well, that sucks. But if it's purposeful, then, you know, I'll try to explain why.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that is something that I just continuously keep an eye on with audience ops is the when to hire new people and how much can we get by with the current team, you know, without taking on new expenses. I mean, for the most part, the model is set up in a way so that I'm paying contractors based on their output, and almost all of their output is tied to specific revenue. So as revenue goes up or down, those expenses are more or less in line. But there are a few things in audience ops that do introduce like new fixed costs. And like this month, I'm moving somebody into a sales role, and that's like a new fixed base salary that I'm giving her, you know, plus some commissions. And so that's something that I'm keeping an eye on here in 2020 is like I've had a pretty consistent, at least a consistent model or like cost structure of audience ops up until now. And this adds a new, it's not a significant percentage of the expenses, but it's a new addition to, you know, into the profit margin. And I mean, obviously the goal is that growth will, it'll result in better growth. But I mean, but the other half of that goal for me is free me up. So I'm not doing sales anymore. And that'll be that, you know?
Yeah. I think you should demand both, right? You should demand to be freed up, but also the revenue goes up. And it is you have a similar situation, I think, like most companies. Some roles, there is a requirement that you increase revenue. And some roles, that requirement does not exist. I mean, it's not surprising that a lot of the roles that you can insist on revenue going up because of their work, those people get paid more. It is in line with it, but it is tempting to have the same standards because you don't want to treat people differently, but you do have a different requirement. If you are a revenue generating role, like you must produce revenue in order to have a job.
Yeah. My thinking going into this was that like, look, I have a pretty good like business savings account saved up. I was intending on spending most of that on Process Kit at some point, but I could allocate a little bit to the sales role and it would pay for several months of her just getting going on it. Obviously, if things decline, I'll just cut the role. If things stay the same, it's like, okay, we'll see what happens. And if things are growing, I mean, it is, I'm not going to get into the details, but it is, the incentives are there to grow. And she's the type of person who seems kind of competitive and I don't think she'll feel very comfortable in things not growing, you know?
How much of that do you share with her? I struggle with this also because I don't know. I grew up in a family business where it was like, you just talked about everything. I was like, all right, this is what we're going to do. This is the campaign that we're going to run. This is how many letters we're going to send out. This is how many customers. So we're going to spend this $30,000 on this campaign. That should bring in customers that are worth, you know, $150,000 next year. Like, do we want to do that? And what is the goal and what is success?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know yet. I know that like she'll definitely have more of she'll be more in touch with how many new leads and how many new customers did we sign this month and how many canceled? Because all three of those metrics factor into her pay. I don't have anybody else on the team who can see the revenue, like the Stripe or anything like that. So of course they could just count the number of clients and do some back of the napkin math, but like, you know, that's about it.
One of the things I struggle with is how much of what you are producing is because of your work specifically, and how much is just the company's momentum is just what happened without you. That's like a weird, it's even a weird question to pose to yourself and to them where you're like, can you please justify yourself? It's slightly, it's tricky.
That is a tricky thing. It's actually one of the things that I changed. I did hire a salesperson like 3 years ago, and I think sort of the mistake that I made, look, this is different for everybody's company. I'm not saying this is the right or wrong way to do it. But for me, what I took away from it was back then it was too heavily weighted on commissions for closed new sales. And so this time around, it's much more heavily weighted on a base guaranteed salary. It's not a full-time role, by the way. It's just she's incentivized on what I'm calling growth clients. So if we if we sign 5 new clients, but we lost 3, she gets paid for the 2. That means a significant part of her role is focusing on retention and checking back in with clients and helping them extend their lifetime and upselling like our add-on products or asking for referrals to new clients. And so it also plays into like setting the right expectations and not just closing the deal to get the commission, you know, all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'll end up talking about this more over the next few months because we are changing our marketing mix and we're going to do more sales and we don't have a sales team and we don't have that. We don't have any commission structure and I don't know what to do about that because in my head, commission can be a good thing, but yeah. Then all of a sudden you have people who are, everyone's on the team and everyone's makes a base salary. And then all of a sudden we're just going to like hand pick 2 people and say, hey, now you have commission. And all of a sudden you can start making a lot more money than everyone else. It's like, I don't know how to handle that.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. It's tricky. It's really the kind of thing that like the more I talk to people about it and hear about how people, it's like every company really handles their sales roles and incentives and payments like really very differently.
Yeah. Very different. Yeah. There are playbooks. But I don't know. We don't feel like a playbook company. I don't feel like this is how you do it. You raise money, you do this, you hire the sales team, hire this type of coach, this many, you know, this many salespeople for this many BDRs and this many BDRs for this. Like that doesn't feel like the way we're going. I did just buy Aaron Ross's new book, Predictable Revenue. So that's the old one. That's from a few years ago. And I use that from when we first started. That was like my Bible on like, how do I just reach out to people and ask them to buy my software?
And the whole industry can thank him for all the cold emails we get in our inboxes today.
that's right. So his new book is called Impossible to Inevitable. And I felt the need to educate myself. I had a conversation with someone who was very experienced. He was on the Bronto team and grew that. And when I told him about my issues around like, well, how do we handle this stuff? How do we start doing sales? He was like, you're doing a lot of things wrong. There are some best practices. Like you should be charging for onboarding. That allows your team to spend a lot more time. And then that also gives leverage to your sales team to say, okay, we can waive the onboarding if you sign up for 12 months. Like you create more levers for people to pull. And you just give them playbooks on like, okay, depending on the scenario, these are the things you can do to get the deal closed. And I just don't even have that mindset, let alone like the knowledge. So I bought that book and hoping that helps me along there.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I don't have much to say about this other thing. Maybe we could just skip to the questions, but I did just decide this week to, this is something that I've been sort of meaning to do for a while is I talked about how I hired a developer and it didn't work out so well a couple months ago. And my thinking back then was like, let me hire like somebody who could potentially turn into a full-time, long-term key employee kind of role. I think for hiring developers right now, my thinking is let me focus on the big features. And for the smaller ones that need to get done, but they're just sort of like periphery and they're distracting from me, let me delegate those to a lower cost overseas developer. And so I haven't really had a ton of success working with Indian developers specifically in the past. I've usually gone to like Eastern Europe or South America, but just based on the applications I got, this guy seemed pretty good knowledge of Rails and hasn't started yet. So hopefully on Monday he'll be starting, but I have 2 specific issues that a lot of people ask for. They're kind of like smaller features, but a lot of requests come in and they're a little bit tricky with JavaScript and things. And so I'm just like, that's really going to hang me up. So let me just have somebody else deal with that. And it's a super specific thing that I can give them very specific specs on what needs to get done. So I'm hoping I can give them like little targeted GitHub issues like this on an as needed hourly basis. And it doesn't cost me a lot and we'll see if he can knock them out, you know?
Cool. It'd be good to hear how that goes. And I mean, if you feel like you want control over the major features yourself, then maybe that's the right way to go. And when I hear that, I can't help but hope that they kind of blow you away and they're awesome and you let them do more. But it's a good place to start.
The tricky thing with India is frankly, the language barrier, you know,
time zone language barrier.
The time zone too. Yeah. Like we literally had trouble doing the initial interview call just because of time zones. And then I did get on the call with them and I'm not big on calls in general, and I expect that for such a part-time guy, we'll be communicating over GitHub tickets most of the time anyway, but I do like to talk to people before I actually start working with them. It's not a smooth conversation. So for that reason, I haven't really invested much in going to that part of the world, because it's like I don't see a lot of long-term potential just because we can't communicate.
Yeah, I think that's why Argentina and South America is becoming more and more popular, because that combination
of and Eastern Europe plus time can zone. Be good too, communication-wise. Yeah,
but the time zone there is a biatch. I'll tell you, 9 hours is, you know, we just had to cancel and move our. I could not get my act together to do these 6 a.m. calls anymore. I just started forgetting them and too tired. You know, we had to change it. We did 6 a.m. calls for years. You know, we did two every week. We used to do it 5 days a week when we really needed it. Then we went to 2 days a week, and I just started falling apart. And the guys on the other end are like, "Dude, you can't just not show up to a meeting." So I felt bad, and we just said, "Okay, let's just be realistic. It's not like I don't care. I just can't do it."
Yeah, I don't know how our friend Craig does it living in Europe. Like, he's always talking about how he's working at night because most of the people in his company or clients or whoever are like in the U.S. It's like. If I had to work in the evenings or at night because of time zones, that there's no way that would work for me. Like, I'm done by dinner time. You
know? I get the second one, but still. Okay, cool.
How about I hit you with these questions?
Set the stage here. These are the questions that you're going into the what's it called? The mini conference, the time
zone. Yeah, Big Snow, I'm going to, you know, I'll do my typical updates on my business, and you know, we're much more transparent with things there. And so I've got a bunch of that. I'm going to skip past that. And then the very last slide is help me think through these questions, but these are good questions for you all to think about too. So I'm throwing this out to the listeners, throwing it out to you, Jordan. The first one is, and we've heard this from other people too, but if you have to 10X your business or my business this year, in the next 12 months, or extremely terrible things are going to happen to you.
Okay.
How do you do it? Like, what do you do? Like, you know, gun to your head, you have to 10X this year.
Get moving. Okay. So I'm not going to tell you, right. but I'm assuming it would make sense for me to tell you how I think about it.
Yeah. How do you think?
Okay. So Tim Ferriss had the founder of Keller Williams. I might be wrong on the name, but it's a big real estate company. I think it's Keller Williams, something like that. The CEO, super interesting guy, really smart. He either wrote a book or talked about a book. I clearly know nothing about this interview, but I got this thing out of it that he calls the one thing. And he asks himself, what is the one thing that I can do that will either make everything else much easier or completely irrelevant? Okay. So that has been lodged in my head ever since I heard that interview, and I've been applying it to things like, how would you grow a lot faster, right? Because right now we are on a linear growth path. We are doing well, but it's linear. And for us, the one thing would be, okay, what is the biggest friction in the system? And for us, it's getting new customers onboarded. New merchants onboarded. And so that's where I would go. I would say, how do we make that irrelevant or infinitely easier? And that has led us into places like, well, what if the merchant doesn't need to be integrated at all? What if shoppers could check out using our thing and the merchant doesn't even have a choice? They don't need an integration, right? Because for us to add 50 customers in a month is a lot. To add 100, it would be really hard. To add 500, we simply couldn't do it. So how do you add 5,000 in a month? That's you kind of need to change completely. So that's the way I would look at it. That or, I mean, a completely new business, you know, in 12 months, that's really, really hard. But if you take the DNA of what we're doing, and then what's the biggest barrier? New merchants signing up. So how do you make new merchants signing up either incredibly easy or completely irrelevant? And so that one thing question has been useful for me.
I can't help but think about, and this also goes into my second question too, but I just don't have a good answer to that first question. It's, I'm sure most people would think about it like, if I knew what could 10X my business, I would probably be doing it already, you know, but I can't help but tie it to just traffic. Like, how could I 10x my traffic in the next, you know?
I think that's
especially for a newer business like that, that is just as difficult to think about. Okay, my second question here is, and these are not questions that I'm actually considering for myself. It's just that, like, the goal is to try to push yourself to think about things that you wouldn't have normally thought about.
Yes, so, absolutely.
So, what if I took a $50,000 investment, and what if I took a $150,000 investment? And maybe you could even add on to that. What about a 500K?
1.5, yeah. Right.
For me, like 50K or 150K. So that might be the difference between like putting some personal savings into Process Kit or going to an angel investment round sort of thing. The thought has run through my mind in the last couple of years several times, but every time it does, I think about it like, I just honestly don't know how I would spend that money differently from how I spend money now, you know?
I would challenge that. Okay. We're back in our pattern. No, but I think if you thought about it, and hopefully you get some good discussion in person at Big Snow, you would be able to come up with a few things, right? Traffic is one way. Distribution is another. Virality is another. Right now, your biggest barrier is what? People signing up for the product and paying and getting onboarded. Like, can you make that irrelevant? Can you just distribute process kits where you don't even need an account?
You mean like go freemium? Right?
Yeah, freemium is one way to do it, but maybe not freemium. Maybe it's you don't even need an account. I'm brainstorming. I'm coming up with stuff. If it's adoption, that's the issue. If it's people telling people, if it's some type of virality where you need people to do it with you, otherwise it's not valuable. I mean,
well, just looking at like the traffic piece again, right?
Okay.
Like if 150 or 50 is not that much money. If I had a million, then I can really go hard on like paid traffic. Even with paid traffic, like you still need to invest a lot just to learn, just to optimize it. And then even then, it's so expensive these days. Like, is it really going to convert? Like that stuff could just burn right away and you're done. And you're not really going to 10x your traffic that way or conversions.
It depends on where you are on the 10x, you know, to go from $10 a month to $100 a month is one version of 10x. But,
right. But what I'm saying is like I, even without investment, like I am going to invest time and money into content. And of course that's going to take much, much longer to play out. But I feel like that's just the nature of growing traffic. It takes a long time now, you know?
Yes, but you're not factoring in activities that have more leverage, right? So what we did with the recovery product when we first launched was nobody cares about us. So we did the outbound sales thing and it worked linearly, but it worked, you know, it worked to a few K a month. And then it was like, we can't just do this for years. That's going to, you know, that's terrible. Then we started doing partnerships with platforms. And then when we realized one relationship with one platform gets us in front of 3,000 people, all of a sudden that's a lot more leverage than one-on-one. So if you went to Process Kit, you say, I'm going to absolutely nail it for client onboarding for agencies. Then you go to the, you know, agency groups and you start doing talks there and you start doing deals with them. Maybe that's more leverage you can get in front of 5,000 businesses that normally it would be much harder to bring them in.
And that's like, you know, strategic partnerships and launching like an affiliate program and everything. That's part of actually my marketing plans for 2020. I don't know that really requires investment. Like that's just something I was planning on doing anyway. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I think you have it right where if that works, that's reason to get investment.
Right.
Like, oh, wow, we found something. This can keep going for a long time. Or, oh, I found something. Now I don't need investment. That's kind of the ideal. But taking the investment first and then saying, okay, now let's spend this money. Hopefully we find a channel that works. That doesn't sound really attractive.
Like where I could start to justify investment in my mind is being more in like a position of where Carthook is, where it's like, look, we have a team. We need to fund these hires because we are growing and we absolutely need to fuel the engine. The engine is going, you know, whereas like, I feel like for me, at this stage, it's too early to think about how I would deploy those funds in a different way than I'm going to be working on the business anyway, you know?
Yeah. I think you have your head on straight. A lot of people see the funding as like the goal, and then like, oh, now we got funding, and now good luck finding a way to actually acquire customers. I think you're in a very similar position to where we were 12 months ago, where if you just added more fuel to the tank, you're not going to go any faster. Like, you still got to do the work to figure it out. Right. We talked to investors a year ago, and that, if I was honest with them, I was like, guys, it doesn't matter how much we put in the tank. If we just start spending, it's not going to be very smart.
Yeah. Yeah. The third question, this is, you know, something that I have not spent a lot of time myself thinking about, but maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't, I don't know, but it's, I don't want to make this all about me too. This is something that I think everybody should think about.
But I think everyone's thinking about it from their own point of view.
Yeah. So what if I went towards a more enterprise sales route to sell process kit, right? And really the question would be like, what would be my first steps, or what could be your first steps? And the reason why for me, this is like a push me out of my comfort zone kind of box, is because I never really done enterprise sales, because there are definitely audience ops clients who would probably be considered close to that enterprise type of level. But I haven't ever really invested in a strategy to go find the right contacts and work those deals over many months and have a pipeline of enterprise deals and sell in terms of annual contracts and things like that. Like, part of the reason why I've always sort of written it off for myself is because I always start with my audience as my jumping off point. And that's like the low hanging fruit that I go to for all customer research and first customers and all that. And enterprise sales never really factored into that. But I do know for a fact that there's definitely a market for a process kit like product in the enterprise, for sure. There are already lots of competitors there. Like, that could be an avenue where I should explore sooner or later. And I haven't given it a lot of thought. And my question, which I don't know, is like, how would I even start with that? Like, where do I go for those first steps? And that's the same question for you listeners. Mm-hmm. and you.
I'll give you my point if you want it. Coming from the bootstrap world that we're kind of, you know, starting out from, anything other than a frictionless sales process we think of as enterprise. And that's not really what it looks like, right? There's a huge varying degrees all the way up to 12 month RFP processes, steak dinners. That's that, like, most of us are not interested in that. Where I would
look, I don't mind a steak dinner.
Hey, especially if they're buying, but right. in this scenario, you're buying. I wouldn't look at it that way. I would look at it as the logical place to start is just services. That's it. You work your way up toward enterprise, you go up market, you learn what they want, how they want to buy, all that as you go. That is like the natural trajectory of software companies, is up market. And so it can go that way, but you do not need to start out there. You probably, it's not right. You don't have the feature set, all that stuff. You just start out with just services revenue. And that's it. And if you can build a model where the services revenue helps you pay for customer acquisition, then you have a flywheel that you can keep spending more money, keep attracting more customers, and keep away from the SaaS ramp of death. If you don't have services revenue, under regular circumstances, when you add a new customer, you're not getting the money back that you spent to acquire that customer for a few months. If you're like us and you want that payback period to be 0 or 1 month or 2 months, you just can't grow fast. So then if you get into a place where you are investing a few months worth and then getting that payback, like, you are in the ramp, like, you're stuck. You go through the desert. You can't spend a lot, because the more you spend, the deeper in you go. What can change that is services revenue. If you can be profitable when you acquire a customer and they pay you back what it costs to acquire, and it pays back the person's salary or team salary that's doing the onboarding and the services, all of a sudden you can spend more.
Yeah. It helps them commit, because they've invested in the services in the beginning. So they're like far more likely to, you know, not to churn.
Yes. And the best customers have the budget and value their time highly enough that they'll say $2,500 for you to do it for us. Yes, please. Just remove that from my to-do list, because we spend $1 million a month in expenses anyway. So the $2,500 for you to help us get our onboarding, client onboarding process better is irrelevant.
That's something, you know, now to take it back to me on ProcessKit again, that's something that I've been kicking around for a while with ProcessKit. I did launch a page called ProcessKit Implementer Service, and I've already sold one. So one, and this was good because it was like a random guy who just found ProcessKit, not for my audience, you know, bought that service, and I helped him out with it and everything. And but this is something that I'm a little bit on the fence in terms of how to fit it into the funnel or where to present it to people. Cause it's like, I could go one route, which is like just cut off all new trial signups and force people to like an audience ops flow where they have to fill out a consultation form. We do a sales call and then they pay several thousand dollars to get started. I could maybe do that, but I feel like that's sort of strangling the funnel, because there are just way too many people who don't want the implementer. They do want to get set up themselves. So currently I do have the trial sign up open, and I'm having a hard time like inserting, hey, you could also buy this service. You know,
it's really hard. It took us 6 months to just make the shift. I think you could do an experiment that wouldn't hurt you, that, you know, a month from today, whenever you're ready for it, you just turn it off. And for 2 weeks or 4 weeks, you just talk to everyone and you raise the standard of who's able to walk in the door and see if it works. So you could always go back, but it is not an easy thing.
Yeah. And that's something that I was going to kind of experiment with back in December. It was probably the worst month you could possibly do that. But I think the problem is that the traffic levels aren't high enough, you know, to get a consistent level of interested parties to the front door every day.
Yeah. You know, you know what you could do, which was an experiment you could run right now, and it wouldn't change anything for you. Anyone that cancels, email them. Hey, I saw you cancel.
I do that anyway.
Like. Right. But email them with the offer to do it for them for thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Hey, I saw you canceled. It might've been because you didn't have the time to do it. What if we do it for you for $3,000?
Yeah.
It doesn't change anything up front. You already have, you know, I don't know, dozens or hundreds of people that have already canceled. It's like, well, why not?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So, homie.
Yeah. Good question.
I got lunch at an Israeli place that's got my name in lights right now, begging for me to head over there.
Awesome, dude.
So I got a boogie. Thanks everybody for listening. Brian, great to talk with you. And next time we'll talk more sales and marketing mix and everything else.
Oh yeah. All right. Till next
cool.
time.
Cool. See you.